Today, here on Cincy Business Talk with Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, we'll be talking to business leaders about how they have grown their businesses and people. We discuss new strategies, tactics, and philosophies which lead to positive growth in our marketplace. Our program is sponsored by Sandler Training by Roth & Associates. Each week, we'll talk with our best Cincinnati area top executives about their tools and insights. Our regular listeners will be given the edge that will help them win in a competitive environment in which we live. Simple solutions to complex problems, which challenge all of us, are rarely correct. We will address complex problems or opportunities with appropriate solutions. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400. Now your host, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, Mike Roth.
Thanks, Scott. This is Mike Roth. I'm here today with Dave Daugherty. He's the CEO and founder of a new nonprofit called Education at Work. Thanks for joining us here today, Dave.
Thanks, Mike, for having me.
Good. Let me give everyone a fast background on Dave. The organization, Education at Work, is designed to allow college students to earn cash money while they're working in college. And, as we'll explain a little bit later, allows them to earn additional money for their tuition. Education at Work only employs college students, and they work in either a customer service role or an IT help desk type of a role. And they can earn up to $6,000 a year in additional compensation based on their grade point average
that's
and the
correct.
Number of hours worked.
That's correct.
That's a great program. Prior to starting Education at Work, Dave was the CEO and president of Convergys, a publicly held New York Stock Exchange company, from 2007 to 2010. As CEO there, he led the transformation and restructuring of the company to focus on the core customer service business and eventually led to the winding down and sale of the company's HR business and the telecom software business. Dave served as CEO of the Convergys customer service business from 95 to 2000, where he put in place a leadership team and grew the business from $225 million a year to $1.4 billion a year in revenue.
Those are the good days.
Those are the good days. Well, that's the kind of thing Sandler Training will do.
Sure, you bet.
Dave began his career back in 78 at Procter & Gamble in brand management. A lot of people.
There's a lot of people here that have taken that path.
Yes,
right.
Yes. He left Procter & Gamble in 86 and worked at LensCrafters, where he founded the
Goggles
line.
It's a chain of sunglass stores.
Oh, okay. I think I've seen those in the mail, in the malls. In 1990, you left to form or join Matrix Marketing, which was IPO'd as part of Convergys in 1998.
That's correct.
That's how you wound up at Convergys.
That's correct.
Dave has a Bachelor of Business Administration from the Ross School of Business in Michigan, and active in the school's Dean's Visiting Committee. In 2010, Dave led the Cincinnati United Way campaign that raised $61 million. 2010, that's a tough year for United
Way. It didn't get any tougher, and I also then followed A.G. Lafley, who did it the year before, who was the president and CEO of P&G, and so it was a tough act to follow.
Someday I've got to get an old Lafley and put him on the radio show. Dave serves on the board of directors of the Cincinnati University Medical Center Fund and the Cincinnati Art Museum. So you probably knew Debbie Bowman.
Oh, sure did. Sure.
Yeah. She was in the Rotary with us, still is. And Dave is a former member of Business Roundtable, where he chaired the Education and Workforce Development Committee. Dave's married and has two sons, enjoys skiing and tennis.
That's correct.
So you went to the University of Michigan. That means you probably didn't grow up in Cincinnati.
That's correct. Grew up in upstate New York.
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York.
Okay. Well, you can't tell from my accent I'm a New Yorker. What brought you to Cincinnati?
Well, it was the opportunity to work for Procter & Gamble, like so many folks have gotten here to Cincinnati. And, you know, to this day, I never look back on that experience. I mean, it's such a great company to work for, and you learn so many terrific skills that you end up taking with you for the rest of your career, whether it's, you know, how to write that famous one-page memo or how to communicate and put your thoughts together, how to manage and lead people. P&G is just, one of the great training grounds, so I was fortunate enough to start my career there.
Yeah, it's interesting. We never solicited P&G to do business, and one of the guys in the Rotary Club introduced me to someone at P&G, and They wound up using us for training for a couple of years.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, we had to rewrite everything we had, and they paid us extra to do that from English into P&G.
P&G is a possess.
Yes, yes. What everyone else calls a selling opportunity at P&G is a...
Oh, I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Initiative.
Initiative. Okay, I should have remembered.
A lot of initiatives. Let me tell everyone, Dave, about a couple of shows that are coming up tomorrow. We're going to have a serial entrepreneur on, Mark Schmidt. He founded Blue Chip Asphalt over 10 years ago, and today he's working on a new startup called Atlas 10, which is a nationwide company for the creation of maintenance plans for asphalt parking lots for large companies, maybe like Macy's that has parking lots at the stores, or Kroger's that have parking lots at stores. Then we're going to have a fellow named Scott Ciccarelli from ADK Pro Audio. On the 15th of March, we're going to have Al Perlman from Perlman Smith CPAs. During tax time, it might get a few extra tax tips, doesn't hurt. And show number 100 on the 21st of March is going to be Thane Maynard from the Cincinnati Zoo.
Oh, terrific.
Let's hope he doesn't bring any alligators or snakes. And on the 22nd of March, we're going to have an inspiring guy named Mike Kelly, who's going to tell us his personal leadership journey, a phenomenal story. In April, we're going to have Alan Bernstein from B&B Riverboats. We're going to have Randy Mitten from Ultimate Air Charters, and he's going to talk about...
Oh, great organization. Yeah.
You've probably flown on
it. We've used them many times.
Yes, great. And we'll have a lot of other good things. End of March, on the 27th, we're going to have another one-day cold call camp here in Cincinnati. If you're interested in that for yourself or your company, call us at the office at 513-753-9400, extension 106, and Carmen can get you the details on that. Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Education at Work, and how did this idea come to be?
Well, great question, Mike. I have always been passionate about education. You see a number of things in my background are educational-related things that I historically been involved in, I'm still involved in today. And so once I retired from Convergys, what I was looking for is an opportunity to take my business experience and apply it to an area that I'm really passionate about, which in this case is education and really trying to solve some of the what I think are some of the big issues in education. So we formed Education at Work. We started, took our first calls in August of last year. We're a 501c3. We're a nonprofit. We can talk about those choices. That was a choice we made, and it enables us to do a lot of things that actually, you know, at the end of the day are very good for the students. So what we do is we hire college students to do customer service work for companies. We're doing that work today for companies like Macy's, Vantiv, which is a spinoff of Fifth Third, Cincinnati Bell.
The credit card processing.
Credit card processing business, right. Mm-hmm. And so our folks, like the example for Macy's, are helping support their e-commerce site. So if you're on their e-commerce site as a customer and you're having trouble, you can't find what you're looking for, you're concerned about the status of your order, you're having trouble with your credit card going through, our folks will help you complete that transaction. So kind of mainstream kind of customer service work. We only hire college students to do the work. They get paid $9 an hour to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is where the nonprofit piece comes. We essentially take all of what would traditionally be the profit that we get for doing these services for the company and put it into a tuition assistance fund for these students. So on top of the $9, they can earn up to the maximum of $6,000 more dollars in tuition assistance. And if you can do the math, that combination of those two things, you know, we believe we've got a chance to kind of fund 100% of the gap that a lot of these students face in funding their education. So the goal is to actually get them through college and have no debt, which is very different than today where the average student is graduating with about $27,000 of debt.
So the $6,000 that they get is paid to their college in pre-tax dollars, so they don't have to pay.
Correct. We're using what a traditional employer would use in terms of their tuition reimbursement program. Again, it's approved by the IRS. Up to $6,000 of those dollars can pass to the student tax-free. So they get the bang of 100 cents on the dollar on those dollars to pay for their college.
Mm-hmm.
The value prop for companies that's got a lot of these companies very interested is we've actually been able to price the service to these companies at a price that's very competitive to where many of these companies today are having that work done offshore or in countries like India, Philippines, Latin America. So a big part of this is to these companies, hey, bring those dollars back here, those same dollars you're spending, use them to create a job for a college student and help these college students get through college in a more affordable way. And oh, by the way, you get better service for your customers. And we've got now the metrics, the work that we're doing, that we're demonstrating these college students can do and deliver better customer service experience than what these companies are getting in countries like the Philippines and India.
You should talk to Sony as a prospect.
We'd love to.
Yeah, my regular machine is a new Sony Windows 8.
So I'm sorry, Mike, I was just going to say that just the last piece on it, just the end goal of the organization, and we don't have examples of this yet, but we will hopefully here in the next few months when our first group of students get their degree and kind of move to the workforce, is ideally we want to get as many of these students placed once they get their degree in full-time employment working for many of these companies that we're doing work for today. So in an ideal world, we've taken a student who may not have had a chance to get through college, get him through college, get him out with no debt, and then get him placed and working in a company that they may never even dream that they had an opportunity to work in. To me, that's the ultimate success.
That's a fantastic opportunity for the students. Now, Dave has agreed to take questions. So if you have any questions, you can call in on 646-595-4916. And we'll be able to screen the calls during the commercial break. Let me ask you one more question before we go to a commercial, maybe two. Dave, how many seats do you have, or how many employees do you have working for you now who are students?
Well, we've been going just a little over 6 months. We have over 200 students already working for us. We have about 25 full-time staff, so in total probably about 225 people in the organization today. We're drawing students from 20 different colleges. So you have to be going to college and taking at least one class in an accredited school.
I didn't even know we had 20 colleges.
Oh, we do. And because we don't want to discriminate. So you pick your choice, a college. It has to be accredited. So that means the traditional schools like University of Cincinnati or Xavier, but it also is the non-traditional schools, the online schools or even the for-profit schools. As long as they're accredited and you qualify for the job, we'll support you.
Okay, something like the Union Institute.
Yes, sure. Sure.
Yeah, we had them on the show a couple of months ago.
And so today, the biggest portion of our students are coming from the University of Cincinnati. No surprise, they're the biggest university in the region.
Yeah.
But we've got 19 others that we're getting students from.
Yeah. Well, you're conveniently located in Norwood.
That's close. So it's close for University of Cincinnati and for Xavier. We'd love to have more Xavier students.
Okay. Well, if a Xavier student is listening, tell everyone else.
Yeah, please do.
Let's take a short commercial break here, and we're going to listen to the story of a brand new networking group here in Cincinnati called Tip Club that here at Sandler Training I'm sponsoring and bringing into town. And we're going to be having their first meeting on March 21st, 7:30 in the morning. Let's hear from Jim Fox over at Tip Club.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Fox of Tip Club. Tip Club is a professional networking organization whose members help each other succeed. We meet once per month and provide a forum where business-to-business professionals are able to connect with more desirable opportunities and build long-term strategic partnerships. I'm inviting Cincinnati Business Talk listeners to come to our free networking event. You'll have the opportunity to meet new people, share leads and referrals, and grow your business through strategic alliances. Membership in our Cincinnati group is open to only one person per specific trade or occupation. Business-to-business professionals only, please. We do not accept multi-level marketing or recruiting-driven memberships. This is our only group in Cincinnati. We'll meet on the third Thursday of the month from 7:30 to 9 a.m. at Sandler Training by Roth & Associates, 4357 Ferguson Drive, Cincinnati, Ohio. This month we will meet on Thursday, March 21st. If you'd like to reserve a seat, please go to www.tipclub.com and click on the events tab. Then just scroll down the list of events until you come to the Cincinnati event. Or you may call 1-800-798-0270. That's 1-800-798-0270. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you on the 21st.
This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Dave Daugherty from Education at Work. Dave, if a college student or a parent or a school wants some further information about your program, how do they get a hold of you after the show?
Sure, Mike. My number, which anybody can feel free to call, my office number, 513-351-1473, or feel free to email me, dave.daugherty, D-O-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y, at education-at-work.org.
Mm-hmm. So as you stand right now, do you need more companies that need customer service work done? Or do you need more students to fill the work orders that you already have?
Well, it's of course, the answer is both. And we're constantly fighting that challenge of getting an opportunity with a client and then having to make sure we get the students to fill it. And then we build up a pipeline of students who are interested in the job, and we need to go find a client. So we're actively working both.
Is there a maximum number of students that you can support in the facility?
Well, in the facility, we probably think 600 to 700 in our facility in Norwood. And then we're in the process. We've already done this with College of Mount St. Joe, who's a terrific partner in this with us. But we'll have in place agreements with the various colleges around the area that as we need more space, we'll have locations on or near the college campuses. So with College of Mount St. Joe, once we fill up the center in Norwood, we will build or we will open a center up at College of Mount St. Joe, which, again, will allow, I think, you know, many, many more of their students to take advantage of the opportunity. And so I'm hopeful we'll have, you know, similar arrangements with many of the other major universities around the area. So that's how we'll expand it. We believe if you look at the numbers of college students today in the area, mm-hmm. the number working already, we believe we have the potential to be employing 5,000 just here in the Cincinnati area. So if we can get to that number and you're graduating a fifth or a quarter of those every year, you know, we're going to change the education level in this community, which makes us more competitive for companies looking to locate here. Mm-hmm. It drives a lot of good things. So, you know, that's our goal, is to try to get to 5,000.
Yeah, it changes the economics.
No question.
You know, I've always had a feeling that one of the ways that you judge a metro is not by the population, but by the percentage of population with a four-year college degree.
Oh, you're exactly right. And one of the key indicators, we benchmark ourselves against other communities that we compete for, mm-hmm. for companies. So it's kind of, it's like Indianapolis, it's Austin, it's Raleigh, Durham, Charlotte. And in that key metric, we're number 9 of 12. Mm. So we got a lot of room for improvement. And you know, to your point, the more we can drive ourselves up that, it's extremely attractive for companies looking to locate here.
Yeah, I guess Charleston, West Virginia is not even on the list.
I don't know. I don't think that's one of the benchmark cities.
Not one of the benchmark cities. Okay, I can understand that. If anyone has heard that in Charleston, you didn't hear it here. have you formulated a unique marketing advantage that you talk about when you talk to companies about Education at Work, Dave?
I believe so, and I think it really stems from out of the gate how we tried to price this, and that was one of the kind of complex things we had to solve. Is we had a price point in mind that we wanted to make the pricing of this to these companies pretty darn equivalent to what they're paying to have this work done in other countries. So, again, that we can come to these companies and say, hey, bring that same dollars and bring it back here. The great thing about it is, you know, we're delivering on that, but then the work of the college student, just the basic intelligence level. If you're in college, you pass through several hurdles, mm-hmm. very different than what I was used to in kind of the traditional outsourcing world. And, you know, quite frankly, you hired people off the street and you taught them the job. In this case, we're taking college students. They know technology. They're just smarter than the average bear. As a result, they're delivering a better quality of service experience. The other thing we're seeing, again, we haven't been open, you know, a little more than 6 months, but the turnover we're seeing is less than 15% on an annualized basis. A traditional outsourcer in this space, the turnover would be over 100%. So the incentive of the tuition assistance combined with the prospect long-term of getting a full-time job, we believe is going to have us have a turnover level that's very different than what is traditionally seen in this industry. And what happens is if you have lower turnover, people stay in the job longer, they get better at it. They deliver even better service.
Right.
So we think at the end of the day, we've got a very attractive value proposition, very affordable and superior service delivery.
And when you talk to college students, you might have someone working in your center for 3 or 4 years.
Well, you know, that's unfortunately the good and the bad. It today, the average for students completing a four-year degree are taking 6 years, in part because of the affordability issue. So there's a chance, again, we could have these students for 4 years, 6 years, for quite an extended period of time, which in the call center, the customer service world, that's a lifetime.
Yeah, to get even 4 years.
Right.
Be a miracle.
Sure.
You know, when I talk to the people to Sony about my laptop, I'm pretty sure I was talking to someone in the Philippines at the first level.
You probably were.
And I explained the problem that when you swipe on the right side of the screen, nothing happens. I think I wasn't talking English. And the lady finally transferred me to someone in San Diego.
There you go.
Second level tech, an American.
Right, right.
And 5 minutes with that guy, he said, oh, yeah. The screen is broken. Let me send you a box to ship it back to Sony.
Well, we're seeing it with the work that we're doing for the companies that I mentioned. Our call, we handle more calls per hour. We're more productive than the offshore providers, and a lot of it has to do with the language and just understanding the context in which the American consumer is dealing with
the problem. American idiom, which is in their head.
Yes,
the language and the logic system that gets beat into us from the time we're little guys, 3 and 4 years old, watching TV,
sure,
until you're 40 or 50 or more, and you have a certain level of expectation of understanding,
right?
Which is one of the beauties of this country.
Yes.
So how do you find companies, or are they finding you?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, we are being pretty aggressive about getting out there and telling our story. I got to tell you, though, it's one of the beauties of starting up an organization like this here in Cincinnati. We've got 9 Fortune 500 companies headquartered here, and there's not many startups that start out of the gate with their first client as Macy's. And that speaks to, you know, what I think this corporate community is like, that they are interested in helping ventures like this, you know, nonprofit organizations that, again, could get them as a customer that, gets us off on a great footing going forward. And so, that's been, a great beginning to our success.
Okay, well, how many other publicly held companies do you have as clients now?
Well, Vantiff and Cincinnati Bell. And we're working in discussions with a large number of firms here locally, as well as other Fortune 500 type companies. We want a portfolio of client companies that, back to my earlier point, are companies actually that these students, once they get their degree, would like to work for. Mm. So companies like a Macy's, companies like a P&G, a Kroger, those are the kind of companies we want to have as our portfolio of clients to do great work for them, but also to be potential long-term employers for these students.
It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. So do you yourself have salespeople at Education at Work?
Me.
You're the sales team.
Myself, and I've got one other fellow, Tim White, who's our vice president of business development. The two of us really are the ones that are doing most of the sales effort at this point. This is a sale that you want to start with the CEO or somebody in the, very high levels of the company. And so, I think I need to be personally involved to be able to make that connection and to begin the sales process.
What do you see as the obstacles to companies using Education at Work?
Well, hopefully not many if we've crafted the value proposition correctly. But, the thing is, I mean, customer service operations are complex things. There's a lot of technology, that has to all be connected to the telephony system and your IT system. And so, once you get that embedded, whether it's in your own internal operations or with another provider, it's not the easiest thing to say, oh, we're going to go start up another provider in this space. And so I give the folks at Macy's credit for being willing to take a risk on us. It was a big undertaking on their side to be able to stand up somebody else to support them. It's no easy task.
So how long did it take from the time Macy said, we'd like to move forward, to the time that you could take the first telephone call?
I think we signed our contract in May or June, and we then immediately began hiring the students. The students then went through a four-week training program. In parallel, we were working the technology piece, getting
the infrastructure piece.
Right, getting the connections, getting the PCs. Cincinnati Bell Technology Service has been a great partner for us in that. We're using a thin client solution, so we don't have a PC at the desktop. We're just taking direct access from the Macy's systems, downloading the images that we need to the desktop for the student. And then we took our first call August 13th. And Deontay Judkins, a UC student, African-American young man, a chemistry major, a 4.0 student who's pre-med, and he took the first call, and we were all huddled around him and taking pictures and everything. And after the call, I asked him, I said, "So, Deontay, what was it like?" And he turned to me and he said, without missing a beat, "Piece of cake compared to chemistry."
Well, you need good people at customer service.
You sure do. We got them.
And all the web transactions for all the companies just means more and more trouble are going to be set up.
No question. Yeah.
Do you have a long-term strategic plan beyond going to the local colleges? Are you ever thinking of taking this thing national in scope?
There's no question about it. We've got a great board who has been able to put together, who's advising me on this. And the idea is we get it right here in Cincinnati, the headquarters facility with the satellite locations that I talked about, employing, again, hopefully multiple thousands of students here. And then literally we take it around the country. To major city after major city around the country. We believe, again, if you look at the numbers of college students today that are working that could use this kind of opportunity, I mean, we believe we've got the potential that we could eventually, with expansion nationally, be employing more than 100,000 students. So, again, on a national level, that could start to make a difference for us, you know, as a country in terms of our education level.
Education level and quality of service for companies all around the company in every part of the economy.
No question. Well, the other piece of that we didn't really talk about it yet is just doing this job, you build skills that you take with you the rest of your career. And that's one of the things I heard. We experienced this at Convergys. I heard this as I went out and talked to a lot of company leaders as I was putting this together. And they were saying, unfortunately, a lot of the graduates today still don't have the skills that we need them to have to be effective in today's workforce. How to communicate, how to problem solve, critical thinking, working effectively as part of a team. Guess what? The call center job, it's a tough job, but you learn those skills.
Showing up every day at work.
Right. Well, it was interesting. I mean, I was up at University of Cincinnati not too long, meeting with Dr. Ono, explaining this concept to him, and he's very excited about it, and he's a great champion for us. But I started to go through and talk to him about the skills that you learn in the call center job, and he stopped me. He said, "You don't need to sell me on the call center job." He said, "I put my way through college working in a call center."
Oh, really?
So I said that to our students. I said, "You know, maybe you too could be a college president someday."
That's great. We're going to take another short break here, and if you have any questions for Dave, you can call in on 646-595-4916.
This is Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. At the first sign of trouble, there are three types of business leader. The first type of leader is like a turtle. He pulls his head and tail in and hides in his shell. Turtles hunker down, just trying to survive. The second type of leader is an opportunist. They're like eagles. Eagles spread their wings and take advantage of the winds. They catch the storm wind and rise to new heights. The third group, between turtles and eagles, are called turkeys. Turkeys are average and anxious. They huddle together and move. They never soar. However, turkeys are easy prey for those who seize the opportunity and soar. If someone in your industry goes out of business, are you going to get the business? The question is, which type of leader are you? Will you seize the opportunities to take market share and grow, or will your fate be like the turkeys? If you're serious about growth, call me to arrange a confidential meeting, 513-646-6523, or check our website at rothconsulting.net.
Hi, this is Mike Roth, founder of Sandler Training by Roth & Associates, the most experienced Sandler sales trainer in Cincinnati. You've heard our commercials about sales and sales management, but you haven't made the call for some reason. Maybe you're having your best year ever. Maybe you think a sales development company won't work in your industry. You're different. I wish I had a nickel for every time I heard that. Maybe you're afraid that if you called, you'd buy something. If you're happy with all your sales and profits,
and believe you have all the answers or simply don't see yourself investing in yourself or your people, then don't make the call. We have nothing for you. For over 20 years, we've been coaching, mentoring business owners and sales professionals who are serious about their careers. So if you believe that Sandler Sales Training might make you better, faster, meaner, and stronger, call me at 513-646-6523 or register for our next open house. Roth & Associates, the most experienced sales trainer in Cincinnati. You can check us at www.rothconsulting.net. This is Mike, and I'm back with Dave Daugherty from Education at Work. Dave, we have a theory of operation here that complex problems can only be solved by complex solutions. If you try a simple solution on a complex problem, invariably it's wrong. So maybe from someplace in your career, either had Education at Work or one of your prior career endeavors, you could share with us a complex problem and the complex solution that you developed for it, and it might be applicable to other people in other industries.
Well, I could give, a lot from the past, but I mean, the one that jumps into mind most recently is the challenge faced with Education at Work and really putting together the business model there.
A startup and a business model.
Well, startup. And you know, what I found is a startup in a nonprofit world is just as hard as a startup in a for-profit world.
Maybe even harder.
Well, and there's some truth in that in terms of raising the equity and raising the money that, you know, I believe if it had gone the for-profit route, the ability to get equity holders, shareholders, I think I would have long ago had the money I needed to launch this venture. It's been more challenging doing it as a nonprofit.
How long did that take?
What's that?
From the time you had the idea to the time you had it funded and it could launch.
Well, I had the idea, started working the idea a couple of years ago, but really got serious January of last year. The only way I saw to get it off the ground was to personally commit. So mm-hmm. I personally committed $500,000 to it. And then alongside me came the College of Mount St. Joe. We've had another individual come in, and we're still in the process of raising $500,000. And we've talked to a number of individuals, institutions about that. I'm hopeful that we'll be successful there. We need the money to kind of get us through this year. And then as we build our revenues, we get to the point where we'll be self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. But that'll be the end of this year, beginning of next year. But the challenge was how to get a price point that was attractive, yet be able to really make a meaningful dent in the problem, which is what I was trying to solve, which is the cost of education. And going the for-profit route, when you have shareholders, and I've lived in this world, shareholders expect enormous returns.
A return on an investment.
Yeah, and oversized for the risk that they're taking, and rightly so. And I couldn't figure out in that model how to get enough money to make a meaningful dent in the tuition problem or the cost of education problem. So I started exploring doing it as a nonprofit. Well, as you can imagine, a nonprofit that actually charges for services is a challenging argument to make with the IRS to get officially awarded the status of 501c3.
I went through it with the IRS with an organization here in town. It took us 18 months.
Right, right.
To get IRS approval as a nonprofit.
And I was very fortunate in that with the help of our great Senator Rob Portman, who loved this idea and became a champion, that he helped me get to the front of the line, and we actually got approval through the IRS in less than 6 months. But we argued it, and it's true, we argued it on the basis of we're skill building these students, and the money we're receiving from these companies is being plowed back into building the skills of these students, helping them become better at communicating, problem solving, those kinds of skills. And so we were, successful in being able to get the IRS to, grant us that. And to me, that was the only way I could figure out how to get enough of the money that we needed to be able to solve the problem. So that's one that took me a while to figure out how to do.
In your pricing algorithm to the companies for customer service, by a percentage, how much percentage cheaper or less expensive are you than offshoring the work?
The way we try to price it to be roughly equivalent with what mm-hmm. they're paying offshore for an equivalent solution by a third-party provider here in the United States, we're 30 to 50% cheaper. So that is the part of the problem we had to solve, is how could we have a price point here in the United States very much lower than what another firm would have.
A typical.
Right. And so, again, we've constructed the model. For example, we don't offer benefits to our student employees. Our only benefit is tuition assistance.
Well, most of them are going to be less than 25 hours a week anyway.
Right. And so they're going to be on their parents' benefits, or they're going to be able to get a low cost through the university.
That, you know, workforce is primarily below 26 years
right.
of age.
But in my old world, you know, we had full-time employees at the customer service work. We were paying benefits enormously expensive. The other thing I found in the startup today versus where we were, for example, at Convergys 15, 20 years ago, the cost of technology has changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So technology costs were 8 to 9% of our revenues in a traditional outsourcer. Today, using today's technology, for us, they're less than 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I pick up 6 margin points just on technology. And then I talked about our facilities. We don't have facility costs. So the universities are going to be providing us facilities as we expand the business. So, and they will pay the rent on those facilities for us.
Or they'll put you in one of their unused classroom buildings.
Right, or rent a facility near campus. And you say, well, why would the university do that? Well, the university do that if they have 500 students working in that center near their campus,
mm-hmm.
they know, and we've been able to demonstrate, we're going to pay on average at least $3,000 to each student each year in tuition. Well, that's $1.5 million they know they're going to get back in their pocket in tuition.
Mm-hmm.
So this works very well for the universities, and they're very excited about that value proposition.
Interesting. And you said College of St. Mary's was one of the
College,
initial...
College of Mount St. Joe.
Mount St. Joe was... one of the initial investors, so they must have been one of the first people you talked to about it.
I did, and again, they terrific college. It's expensive mm-hmm. to go there. It's a great education.
It's a totally private school.
Totally private, right? And
fully accredited.
Yeah. Oh, a great school, and they were looking for how can they help their students make it a more affordable experience. So we formed this partnership. They made the investment. They immediately, even last summer as we were getting started, were already starting to use this as a recruiting tool for potential freshmen coming in, saying, hey, look, consider us because we do have a way, we have an opportunity for you that you can help get you through here in a much more affordable fashion. So they've been a wonderful partner, and we are up there regularly, you know, trying to recruit as many of their students as we possibly can. And then eventually we'll have a facility up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there any timetable on when you're going to have that build-out completed?
The sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned. That means our revenues are growing and we're hitting the targets that we want to hit. But, you know, first we need to get to the point where we have 500 or 600 students kind of in that range in the Norwood facility. Probably shortly before we actually got to that point, we'll push the button on the facility over at College of Mount St. Joe. To their credit, they've already begun looking at, you know, potential real estate options. And the good news is there's a number of them up there.
Mm-hmm. Is that the maximum number of people you could stick into the Norwood facility?
Yes, 500 to 600. 500 to 600 is probably a realistic number.
Okay. The students that are working for you, how do they see it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've done some focus groups with the students, and it's I put this together, and so I always kind of look at it through my lens. Well, these students, you know, when we first approached them, they were very skeptical. I mean, they say some of them were working other jobs and they, you know, are going to quit their job to join the startup organization. And they hear about it and they said, this is too good to be true. I mean, there's no way that, I mean, a company like this doing work for Macy's. And so the first class, we did the focus group and this one woman in there took us through kind of her experience. And she said at one point, you know, Macy's, and then all of a sudden one day the Macy's client showed up and she really was working on the Macy's program. And she said, I'd never dreamed that could happen. And then we paid our first rounds of tuition assistance here just a couple of weeks ago. And so, you know, that, again, I think further validates in the student's mind, this is for real. And it is good, and it is a good thing. And we had a great celebration. We had the students that, you know, had gotten the tuition assistance. We had parents there, parents crying. Actually, our client Macy's even had people come down. They were crying. It's just a great celebration. We'll keep doing that.
Students bringing their friends to see if you can get them in? Is it
well? And we're incenting them to do that. You know, that's your best recruiting tool is a satisfied employee. And we've encouraged them to friend us on Facebook and then to tap into their Facebook network and to be recruiters for us. And we give them incentive; they can earn extra money by bringing candidates that qualify for the job.
How frequently has that happened so far?
Oh, a great deal.
Really?
A great deal. Yeah, the existing employment base has been probably our most effective recruiting tool.
Wow, that's a great story. Do you have a social media program to promote your company to students outside of what the students themselves are doing who are working for you?
We do. We've got under Tim White's leadership, we have a number of folks who are helping us with social media. We've got somebody who works our websites. We've got somebody who works Twitter. We have a couple of different Twitter addresses. One that's kind of the formal education at work, and then actually we have another that has kind of the personality of the student, kind of the inside view of education at work, and kind of providing a little different, different take on the organization.
Do you remember what they are for the listeners?
They can just use education at work, and they just do the search in Twitter, and then they can find it, and they can just connect to us.
Okay.
Similar in Facebook, it's just education at work. They can find us. So no, we're using those tools. As you can imagine, our target audience being the student, we got to be very, very savvy in those in those areas. And we got a great team of folks that are working it.
That's great. That's great. Again, they did agree to take some questions. So if you have questions, you can give us a call here at 646-595-4916, and we're going to listen to a Sandler rule, and then we'll be right back. We're going to listen to Sandler rule number 47.
I'm Brad Massey with Sandler Training. I'm talking to you about rule number 47. Selling is a Broadway play performed by a psychiatrist. What does that mean? Selling is a Broadway play. It's about a performance. It's about sometimes having to do things differently than we're comfortable doing. It's about making changes. Sometimes I need to speak with enthusiasm and excitement. Sometimes I need to speak more subtly and articulately, and I need to explain things deeper. Performance by a psychiatrist. What does psychiatry have to do with this rule? It means we have to have an understanding of human dynamics. Being a psychiatrist is about understanding human dynamics. It means we need to be able to manage the way we speak with people. Be an objective participant to the event when we talk to people. Keep our emotions under control. Be able to ask the appropriate questions in a manner that is not contingent on the outcome. In other words, sometimes if I really want to close business, I get emotionally involved, and what the other person is telling me has too much impact on me. I just need to understand that there's a process in how we go about interacting with people. And if I can say the right things, if I can ask the right questions, then I don't get emotionally involved with this opportunity. And the right thing always happens, yes or no.
This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Dave Daugherty from Education at Work. Dave, I always like to ask experienced leaders like yourself if they'd share with our audience of other leaders, potential leaders, perhaps a leadership tip or two. That's something that you've learned from your own experience out there in the real world.
Well, you've probably heard this one, many times from many folks, but I just can't emphasize it enough. I mean, to me, the ultimate key to success is hire great people. I mean, that's job one, and you got to build a great team. And I've been fortunate enough in many stops along the way to be able to attract, develop a great team. And probably emphasis on not only attract, but to develop. I think the leader's responsibility is you've got somebody's career in your hands, and you've got to work hard to make sure that you bring them along and you develop them to their fullest potential. And second, I guess, would be as a leader that you've got to inspire them and you got to walk the talk. You know, you can't say one thing and do something else. I'm a big believer in being a role model for my folks and really not asking them to do anything that I personally won't do. I guess the last one that's kind of relevant for today's world that I've kind of learned is you get quite often irritating emails or something that really makes you mad, and I now have my 24-hour rule. Somebody once told me that if it feels good to respond, you shouldn't respond. You shouldn't send it. And so, you know, I found just to be patient, to think about it, sleep on it for 24 hours, you find your response is very different than what it was if you would have sent it 5 minutes after you got that email.
Yeah, I have kind of the same rule. When I get something that hits me underneath the fingernail in an email, I'll read it and put it into a holding file.
Right, there you go. Right.
Sometimes I've been known to actually write the response.
Sure, you can do that, as long as you don't send it.
I put it into another holding file.
Right.
The next day when I get a chance to read it, I said, oh, my God, I shouldn't have written
Thank
that.
Goodness I didn't send that. Right.
Right. So right.
I've learned that lesson, and I encourage others to do the same and hold off.
We have a process here we call sales efficiency. And, you know, one of the three steps, everything in Sandler's and Triangles, is get the right people. Because we can't train people who aren't trainable.
Sure.
And there's a substantial number of people, maybe 5%, working in sales or who want to be in sales who aren't trainable. A second step is to have a great process. That's the Sandler psychological selling process. And the third step is to have a great strategy.
Sure.
And only great leaders can give great strategies. When you have all three, you have a company that excels.
Right.
And grows much faster than average in the industry.
Well, I think it's in your second point, but a great strategy, you do need a great strategy, but of course, a great strategy executed badly doesn't work. And
that's
so
right.
The execution piece is
a great strategy.
Is so critical.
Using poor people results in failure.
Right. Can't do that.
Right. So building a strong team, critical component.
Right. Set you up for success. Right.
Right. When you look at your nonprofit today, is there anyone else in America doing anything like Education at Work?
I've been asked that question a lot. We've done a lot of searching. We haven't found anybody. If there's somebody out there that knows of an organization, we'd like to know about them and figure out if there's a way for us to work together. The only thing closest that I've found is companies hire college students as interns, and you know, we'll bring them into their organization. We're different in the fact that again, you know, they're still taking classes while they're working for us. But the big thing that's very different is the tuition assistance model.
Mm-hmm.
Most employers in an internship, again, it's for a limited period of time, usually doesn't have anything close to what we're providing in terms
of
tuition assistance.
Yeah, some of those internships are
some case unpaid.
Unpaid, yeah.
Right. So that's really the only thing we've been able to find to date that we think this is what we're doing. It's quite unique. But again, if there's a organization out there that's kind of in and around this space, we certainly would like to know about it.
Mm-hmm. They're working today with 20 colleges, universities in the Cincinnati marketplace. That's great.
Right.
Have you ever counted up how many total educational institutions there are that you could work with?
That number here in Cincinnati, I'm guessing is probably, well, and I, what I'm doing is I'm in the Cincinnati region. So it's the, you know, that includes Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati, it's the 12 counties that make up the MSA. I'm guessing there's probably 100
mm-hmm.
colleges.
Do you have people from Northern Kentucky coming up to Norwood to work with you?
We do. Actually, we have a fair number of NKU students, which NKU, another great school.
Mm-hmm.
We've got already, that's a long haul for them, but we've got a pretty significant number of those students.
When did the river get wider? You know, 350 miles wide?
Well, I mean, again, you know, for a college student, a lot of times have challenges. So, I mean, fair number. I mean, some of our students have cars, but a lot don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, having to figure out how to carpool or use public transportation, it's challenging, you know, for those students. But to their credit, they're doing it, and I'm hopeful that, again, NKU ends up being one of the colleges that we end up with a location, right on or near their campus.
Yep. That would be great.
The other thing we're seeing, so of the population so far, two-thirds of the students are majoring in STEM, So science, technology, engineering, math, business, or healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And those, quite frankly, I mean, we know there's jobs out there in this community for students with those majors. So we got to do a better job of getting students in those majors, you know, through and graduated. But I'm confident that you know, we've got jobs in this community for students in those majors.
Yeah, and you had a whole new program in computers.
Their informatics program, which is a wonderful program. One, and the quality of the students in there are outstanding. And so, no, that's a program we want to help them grow and help get more students through it because, you know, whether it's Tata or Dunnhumby, I mean, there's companies here that are craving for students with those kind of skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when they're working for you, they're getting that tax-free tuition money.
Right.
Which is a big difference.
Oh, it's very big, right.
Mm-hmm. When you talk to additional companies that may have customer service work for you, what's the biggest objection you hear?
Well, historically was the way we typically sold these services back in my old company is a company kind of had to embrace the idea of outsourcing.
Mm-hmm.
So turning over their operations to
customer service.
Right, yeah. And that's quite a hurdle for a lot of companies. I mean, only about 20% or so of the addressable market are companies who have actually kind of embraced outsourcing. So you're always were fighting that battle. What we've been able to do here is very different. I mean, we will do traditional outsourcing, but we also do what we call staff augmentation work. So very much like a Manpower or a Kelly agency, mm-hmm. we hire the students, they're on our payroll, so they get access to our tuition assistance. But in the example I used with Vantiv, that's the relationship we have with them. Our students actually are going to work in their facility. So that effectively opens up any company that needs part-time employees that would consider a college student. So for customer service or sales support, marketing, analyst roles.
So you're actually sending people up to the Vantiv location.
Correct.
To do the work.
Correct. But they're on our payroll, and so they have access to our tuition assistance. Very much how a Kelly or a Manpower works, but they don't offer that tuition assistance, and they don't usually hire college students.
That's a really good operational one. I didn't realize that. I thought you were doing the Vantiv work down there at your center in Norwood.
Right. No, we're doing it. It was sending
the student has to have transportation to get up to.
Yes, they do. And right. And we can potentially help them with it if we got enough of a critical mass. But in the case of Vantiv, so far, all those students have their own transportation. But of course, what that does is effectively means we can sell to almost any company. Almost any company wants some number of part-time employees, and we've got the opportunity to be able to provide those employees to them.
So if you had a company that had a position for two or three people in Northern Kentucky,
we could hire students and they could
work in Northern Kentucky,
yes.
Even though they go to NKU.
Right. But they'd be on our payroll, and we'd be paying them the tuition assistance. The company, of course, then would be paying us. In that case, we charge two rates. For outsourcing, we charge $19 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
If they go to work in the client's facility, we charge $17 an hour, which is pretty equivalent to the price they would pay to a Manpower or a Deco.
Is there a number of hours per day that a student must commit to work?
No, it's really, we leave that up to the client. And we try to get students matched up with what the hours that the client needs. Students have to work on average 15 hours a week to qualify for our tuition assistance. But they could, if they wanted to and the client wanted them to, they could work up to, on average, 32 hours a week. It just can't go past that because then we'd have to offer health care benefits.
Ah, okay.
So there's a great deal of flexibility. We think the optimum for students, particularly with a full workload at school,
mm-hmm.
is probably 15 to 20 hours a week.
Right.
And there's actually some data that supports students working kind of in that range.
Yeah.
You know what? They do better. Their grade points are higher than those who don't because I think it forces a structure and a discipline for them to learn how to manage their time. And in fact, they end up doing better. They end up doing better in school.
Yeah, I worked in college in the marketing department about 10 or 15 hours a week.
Okay.
it was great experience that I could never have duplicated.
Sure.
I worked for the son of the originator of Pan Am Airways.
Oh, that goes back a while.
Yeah, well, it was the son of the originator.
Oh, okay, okay.
He was a college professor at City College in New York, and he was an interesting guy.
Yeah.
Learned more about marketing from those two professors that I worked for than I did from my marketing course in school. Any last thoughts, Dave, before we wrap up?
One, I just appreciate you, Mike, having me on and helping me get the word out for education at work, and you know, to companies out there that you know potentially would be interested in exploring this. We'd love to talk to you, and then equally important, parents that have students or students themselves that are listening to this, you can go online and you could get right to our application, and you know, we'd welcome the opportunity to get as many as maybe the students looking at this as an employment opportunity.
And the website again was?
Basically you just do a Google search, education at work, and then we'll pop right up, and you just, you know, they'll take you right to our website.
Good. Dave, I appreciate you being here today, and I'm going to give you a copy of Sandler's first book over there, You Can't Teach a Kid to Ride a Bike, at a seminar. That's a...
Terrific.
A simple explanation, in the first 15 chapters anyway, of the Sandler selling system.
Okay.
If you want to read the book the way Dave actually wrote it before the ghostwriter manipulated it, read chapter 2 before you read chapter 1.
Okay, I will. Okay.
Because that's the way he wrote it. And then after you finish chapter 15, fasten your seatbelt, because chapter 16 was probably 1,000 pages further in the manuscript.
Okay.
And the ghostwriter cut those 1,000 pages out. And Sandler insisted on putting that in because it was necessary.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And that book has been around probably for 12 or 15 years. Every year probably sells 10,000 copies. It's a great book. Dave, again, thanks for being our guest here on Cincinnati Business Talk Radio. And I'm going to ask Scott to take it away.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net. Or call Mike at 513-753-9400.